Good afternoon. Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Tyler.
How are you?
I am well. I am in a pensive, deep thought mode today.
Okay.
So even though it seems like it's kind of the middle of summer, we're going to be talking about grieving and death, which generally isn't something that you talk about pre-Labor Day. It's kind of like, you know, you stop wearing white after Labor Day and then you can talk about death. But during summer, we wear white and we don't talk about death. We're flipping that.
Is there any particular reason this subject comes to mind today?
Well, this summer, I have had a higher number of losses in my life, in my circle of friends.
Sorry to hear that.
And so it's just kind of come loss after loss. I've attended more memorial services than barbecues this summer. And, you know, that's kind of been in my head that I've been in a state of some sort of kind of grieving and remembering and heart heaviness all summer, starting in the spring. And my friend Michelle and I have both been with our husbands for a long time, since we were teenagers. And we were out walking one day a couple months ago, and out of the blue, she looked at me and she said, "Either my husband or myself are going to have to live with incomprehensible grief, because one of us is going to die first and the other one's going to have to stay and deal with that." And it was as if we'd both had that thought for the first time, you know, mm-hmm. maybe in our, because you don't think about it every day, but, you know, when you've spent your life with someone and they become your reality, it's impossible to kind of imagine that, and then they're not there. Even though we know that happens and we see it happen to people and it's a part of the process of life. Just in the moment that she said that, it just struck me that is the ultimate end of a love story, is tragic grief.
Yeah.
And so I, as a therapist, was thinking about the process of grief. I work in the world of grief a lot. When I was getting my master's, we studied a lot of James Hillman's work. And James Hillman talked about making grief, because he was in his, you know, very elder years. He said, at this point in my life, I've lost so many people and so many things in my life that grief is an everyday occurrence. There is no space in my life where I'm not grieving something or someone. And so I've just made a grief practice part of my daily ritual, just as I make meditation part of my daily ritual. And that always struck me, that if you live long enough, grief will, there won't be really any space between, that you'll be in some space of grieving a lot. And I've been feeling that this summer and thinking about how to incorporate some sort of grieving practice into my life and what that would look like. And then it also occurred to me that we all lose people. We will all lose people. If we have walked the planet, we will lose people that we've loved along the way. And yet there is zero curriculum devoted to the process of grieving. You know, we spend a lot of time teaching people, maybe not even teaching them, we spend a lot of time talking about taxes, and we spend a lot of time talking about home improvement, or, you know, there are classes online for just about everything. Yeah, we spend a lot of time talking about sex and how that works, and there's manuals out there for it. But we don't have classes on grief and death and dying. And it's so essential to be prepared, because there are resources and there are skills to grieving. And yet we don't tend to learn them or access those resources until we're in a period of time where we need them. But then we're so in process of being out of our mind, which is the kind of definition of grief, that we are out of our body and out of our mind. We are living in an altered state. Grieving takes us out of that day to day. So we're not in a place to really understand what the resources are. And so I was thinking about how important it would be to prepare for grieving. And I'm not even talking about preparing for death, because that's a myth. You can't prepare for death. But we can prepare for grieving, because it's a fact of our life that we're going to grieve. And so to, while we're not in a place of being out of our mind, to take the steps to put together some sort of framework of, when I lose someone, here are the resources that I will access to help hold me during that time. And so I've invited a friend into the studio today, my friend Constance Hart. And Constance has suffered a devastating loss in the last 5 months of her beloved soulmate and partner. And 5 months is very soon in the grieving process. And it's interesting because Constance and I met as professionals. And then I was going through my own period of time a few years ago of pretty deep grief and trying to figure some things out in my life. And I wandered into a full moon circle or a workshop that Constance was giving. And she didn't really know why I was there, what was going on in my life, but just being in her presence that night was really helpful. Just held me in this great space that I felt like I could breathe for that night at least. And then 2 years later, I found out about the passing of her beloved Ed, and I just reached out and sent her an email and said, "You may not remember this, but here's what you did for me, and I just want you to know that I'm here for you, for whatever you might need me for, an ear, a warm body in the house, whatever." And she wrote back and said, "Thank you." And then we literally bumped into each other, physically walking in and out of an office door. We bumped into each other, looked at each other, took a moment of recognition, and then just hugged for a very long time. And she said, "Well, I guess this means I need to see you." And so we've had some visits and talked about what's happened in your life, and not talked at all, and just talked about things that had nothing to do about death and life. And so when I was preparing for the show this week, we were texting again and kind of, "Where are you and how are you feeling?" She said, "I've been having laryngitis and I'm kind of struggling, but you know, if you have some time." And I said, "Well, I'm leaving on a trip, but I'll make time for you." And then I don't know who said what, but I said, "I kind of need a wing woman for Tuesday." And she said, "I'll come in." And I was blown away, because this is early in the grief process for her. But I said, "I'll take it. You come, and let's just see where the conversation takes us." So my friend Constance Hart is here with us today. She's a spirit counselor. She's a holistic therapist. She's a beautiful human, and she's in a time of grieving. And so we're going to open up the phone lines and have a conversation about the process of grief, how we can and if we can prepare for grief, and how we can move forward in that empty space left behind when the person that we've built our life around is no longer there physically. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. The number to be part of our conversation is 805-781-3875. You can also find me on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. Like the page and you'll get updates of shows. You can leave me messages there or post on our timeline. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. And you can also podcast our show by visiting Apple Podcasts or NPR One, however you find them. Search for A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and you'll be able to listen to those shows at your convenience. So today, I'm not sure where we'll be going, but I'm glad you're here, and I look forward to following the conversation wherever it takes us today. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to take your calls. And this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Thank you for tuning in today. My guest is Constance Hart. Thank you for being patient during my long introduction, and I'm glad to see you here.
Thanks. No hurry.
We've spent a lot of time kind of sitting on your couch looking out at the bay the last couple months, so this is kind of a new space for us.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if you could start us off and talk a little bit about when we texted, why he said, okay, I'll come out the door and come in and see you.
Well, let's see where my voice is at today. I guess part of the reason is because I was suffering with laryngitis for 3 weeks, now into a month of barely getting my voice back. And this was a result of actually having an illness and having an infection and bronchitis that then turned into laryngitis. But then as it was lingering around, I did have the conscious awareness that I just had enough expression. I've been very conscious and awake with my grief, absolutely no holding back of the expression of tears or anger, and even reaching out to others and responding to friends and family and having discussions. And I've been a teacher all my life, so of course teaching about my experience, my personal experience, but then also kind of the global experience. Just at some point cued me into, I think I'm tired of talking about this, and I'm tired of listening to the cries. And so part of the reason why my voice has shut down is really to give myself a rest from it. And for others, I think it's usually the opposite. Mm-hmm. They need the push, or, you know, yeah, the little nudge to get to actually have their full expression. And for me, I think it's the opposite. So I just thought, well, I really wanted to have a chat with you personally and just say, well, what are you hearing and seeing about me right now? Do you think I'm just like crawling under the covers? And then we decided, well, let's do it on air. So mm-hmm. Why not?
Here we are.
I'm just happy to see you and be with you. It doesn't matter
we
where.
We can just sit and hold hands and
yeah,
take
sorry,
phone
listeners.
Calls.
We're just going to sit and hold hands for the hour.
And it's interesting because when we first connected and we talked, I mean, that's been my experience through grief is that because I talk for a living as well, quite often don't need to talk as much. I just need the physical presence of another human being with me, just in the moment, just like witness that I'm in pain, and then just be there, and then know when it's time to leave, which is the other art. It's like know when I need you and the hug, but then know when it's time to leave. And those are not things that we ever teach people, or how to write a note of condolence, because I'm sure you've received many over the last few months, and mm-hmm. I'm sure some were more helpful than others. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you can talk about that, because I've written mm-hmm. quite a few letters this summer, and what I had learned from my mother and my grandmother is you never buy a card, you always handwrite a note, because the cards are a little cliche or a little impersonal, to write a note and to always include a memory that you have of the person who passed in the letter. And that they're really, you know, aside from that, there's not many things you can say. Have you received condolences that worked well or did not? Because I think people are afraid to write them because they don't want to say the wrong thing. Or
That's a lovely thing to bring up, really. I appreciate that. Well, before I answer that, I'll mm-hmm. just say the hug, the depth and of feeling and caring that you feel from just hugging someone without words, it really does go so long and so far. But to receive that hug, you have to yourself as the griever mm-hmm. have reached out to someone or had them reach out to you to get that hug. So that's often, I know for me in the first 3 months, that was the most challenging piece of the puzzle, is being brave enough to ask. And it really, I'm a very courageous, confident person in my usual mm-hmm. pre-Ed moving on self. And I was just amazed to observe how challenging it was for me to even walk out the front door and just walk. I would literally get myself to a neighbor and just say, could I have a hug today? Mm-hmm. And it's actually quite a wonderful space of uncomfortability to and vulnerability to allow yourself to get to and to go into. as far as the condolences, wow, your mother did a great job. I mean, that's a great teaching. So I second that. I think the most meaningful cards and notes that I've gotten were just simply that. And not, I mean, the typical, so sorry for your loss, it's okay, you know, but I'm actually not seeing, I mean, of course there's a loss of his physical presence, mm-hmm. but I'm every day, you know, holding on by a thin thread to not focus on the loss and to focus on gain isn't really the right opposite of that, but the expansion mm-hmm. of the love that we had. So when somebody chooses to share a memory or, you know, just how much our love inspired them, that feels so pleasant.
It's like reading a hug. You have the physical hug, and then you can read the words in that hug. And it is, go ahead.
And I did also want to mention that in today's day and age, we are so blessed with the ability to text. I have never appreciated texting more than these last 5 months, honestly, because the texts that I receive on a daily basis have been a lifeline to connection. And I did want to share this for listeners, not as a judgment, but as a, you know, this is just coming from my personal experience, and we're each different, of mm-hmm. course. We're all going to grieve differently, and we're all going to want and need different things. But for me, the questions are too much. Mm. You know, may I bring you food? What do you need? And the big one, how are you? That question, how are you? I can't even begin to answer that, really, especially not in a text. And it's not even a question that I want to answer, even 5 months in, mm-hmm. and probably not even 2 years in. But I think the people that have touched me the most through their texts are the ones just that say, just sending you a hug today, or sending you love and hugs, or even just the beautiful, valuable emojis that are available of a heart and the hug one. Mm-hmm. And you know who you are out there. I know you're listening. That text that you send me every day with the heart and the hug and the heart, it goes so far.
And it's interesting because we do bash on technology a lot, but when we're feeling mm-hmm. alone and kind of in our, not really wanting a house full of people, but wanting to know that people are still thinking of us, that is magical. And I'm glad you brought up the point of the questions, because in my head I'm picturing the text that I've sent lately, and I think that I try to say thinking of you or saw this today and thought of you, but I'm pretty sure I end everything with how are you feeling? And maybe that's a therapist fallback thing, how are you feeling? But I can understand that the questions would feel tiresome, because it's almost as if you're having to make everyone else feel comfortable with their grief or their concern about you, and that's just more energy out.
It is, and not that I'm complaining about that, because I do feel, obviously, to become widowed at the age of 52 was completely unexpected, mm-hmm. and I feel like that unexpected a deeper spiritual awakening is occurring through me, and it must be part of my personal mission to help educate, because I am very contemplative and I do read a lot, and you know, I am a thoughtful person and I am always caring about other people, that there's a part of this experience of paying it forward, you know, mm-hmm. that's important.
But also I think there's the piece of when we're teachers or healers, quite often teachers and healers are the worst at receiving the love that's coming to them. And I think there's a lesson in that as well, because I find it, you know, I think many people find it easy to show love and bring a dish or bring a hug or bring flowers. But when someone's trying to express that love back to us, I think a lot of times that's what's hard to take in, that we have a harder time receiving love that comes our way. And then it goes back to a little bit of the whole grief process that we're kind of talking about. It's like, One, how do we prepare ourselves for the grief that we will inevitably have to experience? And I'd like to talk about some of the things that have worked for you that feel comforting. And then also to help people have tools to know how to reach out to those who are grieving. Because as I said, I've written a lot of cards this summer and attended memorial services and different services, celebrations of life. You know, almost all of them have been celebrations of life. And do we bring something to them, or are we supposed to, you know, how do we behave at these? My own experience was that I always try to bring a picture, and again, a memory, something tangible that reminds me of the person who passed, and leave that behind. Because I also feel like we do very well up front when it comes to grief as a culture. People show up, they bring food, we have a service of some kind, there's a lot of attention, and then people fade away and get back to their life. But for those who are grieving, quite often the grieving intensifies. It doesn't get easier, but in that first year, it actually intensifies. And then that support system that was there initially now is hard to find.
I very much agree, because I'd say for me, the first 3 months were complete. Well, not complete, but the majority of the energy was shock and trauma, mm-hmm. really. And then I have to say, in this last month, what actually kicked me into laryngitis was the fact that a dear friend of Edinar's was killed. Her and her 3-year-old child were killed by the father of the child, and who then committed suicide. And you know, you hear of these things, murder suicides happening, like, just never in a million years would I think that would be something that would be happening in my circle of conscious, loving, elevated people. And I was tasked with telling a very close friend of hers about that passage, and I realized later that day, after sobbing with my two close friends who were the gal's closest friends. So, I mean, this is very close to home, this passage. I realized, oh my gosh, I had to tell her about Liv and her daughter, and I was the one who had to tell her about Ed. She was one of Ed's closest friends, too. And I just thought, actually, I didn't even think about it. It was the next day when I woke up with completely no voice.
I did not want to be the messenger.
Yes, but I bring that up to say, so I've now had a stimulation of shock. Mm-hmm. And I think that shock is such a big part of the grieving process. It is in my case with an unexpected passage. I suppose it would be different if you're with your spouse that, you know, has
a long term,
yeah, a terminal mm-hmm. illness or something you've known about for a long time. So I've read a lot about that too. What's better? Is there a better with knowing ahead of time so that you can prepare yourself? But I think that shock is something that we go through with all forms of loss, you know. And of course, this is something that I was rolling my eyes about months ago when, you know, reading things about, oh, the loss of a job, it's the same. Mm. It's not the same. However, there are element, I mean, the element, the foundational elements of loss are going to be the same.
How the body processes
the
physical response to the shock and the dissociation or the out-of-bodiness of it, because it's almost too much for the psyche to bear, so we kind of withdraw psychically. Yeah,
yes, and actually we could even shift the word shock, I guess, to disbelief could be mm-hmm. part of that, which feels like that might be something we deal with more in our daily, like, what?
Right. This is not...
Even politically, and we're not going to talk politics here because I don't talk politics, but here I am bringing... You know, just even in the climate of what's going on politically, there's this energy of disbelief.
Yes.
So
that we never get our feet underneath us, because it's every day a new shocking or moment of disbelief. If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Constance Hart, and we're talking about grieving, Not really a sunny summer subject, but part of everyone's life at some time, maybe daily, maybe periodically. But grief is a normal, natural cycle of the human experience. And Constance and I wanted to talk about it because we don't have training or skills taught in schools or even maybe passed along with families on how to deal with grief, how to support those who are grieving, and also how to prepare for grief that will be inevitable in our lives. As I mentioned earlier, we can't prepare for death, a sudden death or a terminal illness that ends in death. You can't really prepare for that, but we should be preparing for grief. What are some rituals that you can establish in your life that can help you and you can lean on when you're going through periods of grief? I'd like to know your experiences with this or your feelings about grief. Have you been prepared? How have you dealt with it? 805-781-3875 is a number to be part of the conversation. I think that this conversation is challenging also because people are afraid to talk about death because there's an element of the, if I talk about it, I'll catch it. I don't want to be around someone who's experienced death because I don't want to catch whatever they're experiencing, you know, with grief. I don't want to be around a grieving person because I don't want to feel, you know, I think a lot of our society is built around putting bubble wrap around ourselves in real life. Have you experienced that at all, that people tend to, there are some people that back away?
I'm experiencing that now, okay. I think. The first month I was away and I stayed with my parents. When I came back to town, I had a great many visits and, you know, really pushed myself to have connection when I just wanted to crawl underneath the covers, you know, and sometimes I would have two different people come in a day and then, you know, kind of dancing with, okay, what's too much now and what can I handle, and really having to massage that. But I think that because I've been such an inspiration, I mean, I'm an inspirer. I'm not.
Did you know that your life energy is around inspiring others?
That wasn't an ego statement. I'm not saying that, but I'm a positive person, typically. Yeah. So I think it's almost disorienting for my students and clients to see me in a sad state, mm-hmm. you know, and so I don't know if that's the reason why people have disappeared. I guess the other thing that I contemplate is 5 months in, people have certain expectations. Oh, she's strong, or she's a therapist; she can handle it herself, or she knows what to do. Mm-hmm. She doesn't need me. I mean, she's my therapist, right? You know. So, but the truth of the matter is, when you have a day in and day out, you know, like Ed and I did, such a treasure of a relationship, such a deep, fulfilling, loving relationship. And because we were both self-employed for the last 2 years we were together, we saw each other and talked with each other so often in a day. To go from all of that to the nothing that it feels like, other than the conversations in my head, which we could also talk about as another subject, it just, you know, can feel very empty. And so,
and there is that, again, that loss of physical presence, because you talked about the spiritual piece, and I've heard that a lot from friends who have lost a beloved partner, that they can still hear them or feel them, mm-hmm. their energy in the room, mm-hmm. but that physicality of being able to hug someone or mm-hmm. see their face, or that physicality is overwhelming. And we talk about, you know, homeostasis, that, you know, everything in life is kept in balance by homeostasis, and our psyche is kept in balance. And when we have an intensive love relationship, we build our reality around their presence. And when they're suddenly gone, that's why we feel out of balance and overwhelmed, because we literally have lost that equalizer in our lives. And now we have to reform a new homeostasis of some kind. And that takes energy, and that takes courage. And I think that's why there's that internal process, because you're not standing upright when you've lost the physicality of someone who's been your world.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, there's a couple directions I want to go, and I'm going to give you a chance to kind of breathe it in for a moment. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, share your experience of grief or your thoughts, or if you have any tips on how to support others who are going through a tough time, or how you've been supported when you've gone through a tough time. I think sharing our knowledge and our cultural expectations when it comes around grief is an important thing to share, because we don't do it. 805-781-3875. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. Elizabeth Barrett. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. 805-781-3875. My guest is Constance Hart, and we're talking about the process of grieving. And Constance is in the process, 5 months into grieving the loss of her beloved partner, Ed. And so, Constance, can you talk about what your grief rituals have been, or what has been helpful for you in actually grieving Ed?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think most important is self-care, mm-hmm. because in grieving, in through this process, I mean, just the basics, I mean, I heard this and I read this, and to find myself in an actual state of eating, brushing your teeth, bathing, sleeping, just changing clothes, is all an effort, honestly. And, you know, just the basics of self-care, of just making sure that I'm eating, I'm drinking water, I'm changing my clothes, I'm brushing my teeth,
and
I'm getting enough rest.
And do you have to find the energy for these things?
I mean, honestly, and I will say that I've helped many people through depression over the last 20 years of working with clients and students, and I never really knew from a personal experience of how deep, you know, a depression can take you out of just physical living and being able to handle the day-to-day. Mm-hmm. So then from elevating from just being able to, okay, I'm getting up and I have the will to eat and I have the will to brush my teeth and I have the will to bathe. I have the will. For me, nature is first and foremost. So every day, maybe there's been 2 days that I had to take off, and a couple through the bronchitis, but I get out and walk, and I walk to a nature preserve by my house, and I sit in silence without my cell phone, without texting. I just listen to nature, listening to the leaves on a tree moving, looking at what's in front of me, really experiencing all sorts of birds and animals that we don't normally see on a daily basis. Coyotes have come to me, snakes, deer, a buck. hummingbirds staring me eye to eye, not moving for minutes on end.
It's almost as if in grief you've opened to another plane or another energy that's kind of coming to you. We get so caught up in our day-to-day.
There's a slowing. There's a slowing that happens, and I have relished it, and I think that it is something to really relish. Mm-hmm. I'm a writer, and I'm writing a lot about this experience, and I shared in something I wrote that sometimes I'm astounded that I could just sit and look out the window and 3 hours have gone by. And in that 3 hours, there's been contemplation, but then eventually, you know, it's like a real deep meditation where the contemplation and the thoughts and the questions and the answers and the ideas just move into complete ease with silence and ease with emptiness. So that's a big part of it for me, is finding an ease with what is seemingly empty, and then feeling the fullness from that.
I love that. Because we talked about the empty space left behind by the person who filled our life, and instead you're finding a richness in different areas. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Jack, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I've called in before about veterans with PTSD. Mm-hmm. Probably remember that. Mm-hmm. Just listening to what the lady was talking about was very, very interesting and really good insight and good thoughts for men to talk about. Here in the Central Coast, there's a lot of car clubs, and I belong to two of them, one of which we had two men recently pass away, and their wives are burdened with unloading their prized possession, the car. And so we've started a women's group just recently of members in the car club to take the widow under their wing and support them. And it's just starting to work. And I wish there was a way that we could integrate with this last lady was talking about.
Well, and Jack, is there a website or a way that someone who might need your help could contact the group?
Other than California Central Coast Porsche Club of America, that would be our main group, car club anyway.
And I so appreciate your call on another level, because my father's a car guy, and you might know that. And he has, on more than one occasion, been tasked with offloading the car collections of friends who have passed, and their wives have no idea what to do. And it's one of the things that we haven't touched on yet, which is the grieving, the loss of the person, but also what they've materialistically left behind, and having to deal with that. So to have your group be willing to step in that space, I'm sure, is incredibly helpful.
Yeah, we've gotten some good feedback from especially one lady in Morro Bay.
Jack, thank you for calling. And Chris, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
I just thought I'd throw in a few points. You know, it takes a lot longer than I think our society is really gives time for when someone's grieving. It can take so much longer. But in the employment world, you know, you can take a week of vacation or take some bereavement time and expect it to be back in a week or two and, you know, hit it like nothing ever happened. And I think that can be really hard for people in the workplace.
Hi, Chris. Yeah, I honestly, in my situation, being self-employed, I'm not back to work yet, and it's been 5 months. And I can't even imagine. It leaves me speechless.
We allow, I think, 6 weeks of grieving before it's considered a mental health thing. And do you think it's different for men, too, as they feel more pressure to jump back to work? Or maybe is it a salvation, Chris, in some ways, to get back to work?
I think it's different for men. But, yeah, it's probably a salvation for a lot of guys. it's just tough for everyone else, though. They don't know how to, you know, if you're not acting normal, then how are we supposed to treat you?
When someone returns to work after a loss, how do we talk to them? And I think that's a great question, too, you know, because my experience with grief is that people want to talk about the person that has, that they've lost. They still want to talk about them. They want to talk about their presence. They want to have good memories. They want to have them still be alive in their life. And I think we're not taught that that's okay. And so people start to try to talk about everything but the person who died because they don't want the person to feel sad. And yet that's exactly what the grieving person wants, is for that person to still be alive with them. Does that help? Is that helpful?
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for calling in. I mean, how has that been for you? Is, you know, do you want to hear about Ed? Do you want to talk about him daily? Is that helpful?
Yes, and in fact, I was going to mention this earlier, that part of my grieving ritual is putting a lot of energy and effort into being with his aliveness, being with what was alive in Ed, which is still alive in our household, in our friends, in his songs, in his art, in his photography. And I forgot the question already. I've got widow's brain. It is a thing, actually.
But having Ed be alive in your life,
yes,
and talking about him,
yes,
is part of the grief process, because he's,
yes,
not here physically does not mean that your love has died with him.
That's right. And I think that that is so important. That's why for me, I'm not saying it's the end, mm-hmm, of a love story. Mm-hmm. It's an expansion of our love story. Mm-hmm. And I'm able to experience that because I do meditate. And meditation, folks, you know, you don't have to sit down cross-legged, and it doesn't have to be a formalized ritual. It can be while you're out walking. It can, you know, meditation in daily life is really what we're after. So I'll say, because I'm always practicing, cultivating, and having a meditative mind and being in a meditative mind state, that I do receive messages from Ed's consciousness. And, you know, we may all have different beliefs and ideas about, you know, what happens when the human being dies. That's the end of it for some, and for others they're in heaven, and for other, you know, there's so many possibilities in our mind about what that is. And I have actually been shown, not in sleeping dreams, in alive waking moments, Ed's consciousness alive.
Well, and one of the things we talk about in grief, we make it feel as though when someone dies, we're grieving their loss and they are now gone from our life and we have to move on and away from that love. But in reality, grieving is the transition of that relationship. The love for the person carries on. The love of that relationship still is there and present. And so this idea that we're supposed to get over someone and move on is part of the reason we get into trouble. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. Hi, Don. You're on the air.
Hey.
What's on your mind?
Oh. Well, you know, we've talked last, and I did enjoy that conversation, by the way, as I do most of yours.
Thank you, Don.
The Graham Foundation and Lighthouse, I'm calling LASER,
mm-hmm,
Lighthouse Atascadero Support Education Resources. And we have at the Chamber of Commerce in Atascadero, it's brand new. It's a display that has about 40 titles of books that deal with all kinds of loss and of grief and of pain and of suffering and of addiction and of recovery, of great titles. And those books are free for checking out, and just go to the chamber office. They have the books there. You have a sign out sheet and go through, take a look, and whatever anybody wants to take, they can take and bring it back when they're through.
Thank you, Don. And thank you for the work that Lighthouse does. And I look forward to having you back on the air to continue the conversation. So resources.
Yes, I was going to say that my local library has become my best friend. And gosh, folks, it's such an incredible resource. And I'm a book reader, and Ed was a book reader. And in fact, when he passed away, he had 25 books out from the library that I waited until the absolute last moment. Actually, I called them in advance and said, I don't want to let these go yet because it's part of him. Mm-hmm. And actually, they were quite flexible. But the books, I did want to recommend one book that in particular called Resilient Grieving by Lucy Hone that I've already read three times. It has been so valuable and really beyond just the typical five stages of grieving that you may have heard about. She actually is a researcher in resilience, and then her daughter was killed, and this, I really recommend that book. And then beyond just books on grieving, for me, again, books that are meditative in nature that are helping to teach how to deal with your mind, because the mind loves to play tricks on us. Yes. And it can shift us from, you know, sadness to fear to anxiety in times when, I mean, there are going to be times where the sadness is there, but the mind can actually trick you into going into sadness when you might not actually be in sadness in that moment.
Yeah, so having the patience for yourself with all the different states you're in, but also to have some tools to not get lost in the grief. We talk about people getting lost in the grief because they just kind of follow the mind wherever it wants to go instead of realizing, no, I can have ritual time to grieve each day, and I will give my psyche and my mind this time each day. But then the rest of the day, I'm going to walk or I'm going to bathe, and that we have to in some way control our grieving as best we can so we don't get lost. Rosemary, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind today?
Talking about books, one that helped me because I'm a library person too, and I must have read 25, 30 books on grief, and they just sounded repetitious, and they weren't meaningful to me until someone recommended Swallowed by a Snake, and I can't think of the author's name, but it's more from a man's perspective of grief and how they grieve differently than women. They do it through action, through a project, mm-hmm. and I really responded to that way of grieving better than just sitting and talking. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Swallowed by a Snake helped me, but when my husband died, it was unexpected. It was medical errors after a surgery that was successful, so we had a whole calendar of events planned for, you know, post-surgery and recovery, and it was such an abrupt end. And when I did take my husband back to England for service and burial, he was from North Ireland, my sister-in-law, my Irish sister-in-law, who is very wise, she said something like, don't cry because it's over, be happy because it happened. Mm. And I took that quote and I thought, oh my God, that's terrible. How could somebody say that to maybe, you know, don't be sad that it's, you know. And so it took me a few years. She didn't know who wrote it, but it took a couple of years, and I saw it in the paper. It's a Dr. Seuss quote, and it's, don't cry because it's over, smile because it happened. Mm-hmm. And she told me that not everybody has a love that they are actually sad when the person goes. Some people are glad the person's gone. Mm-hmm. She in her long years, she knew people who were quite relieved. And I finally understood the quote and the context that Dr. Seuss wrote it in, not necessarily death, mm-hmm. but the end of a vacation or the end of a graduate degree study, you know, that you got through it. Mm-hmm. And that, I still have that quote taped in my laundry room. So when I iron clothes or in there doing washing, I see that quote and I go, yes, mm-hmm. I am so glad that it happened. Because not everybody mm-hmm. has a love that they can hold on to, even though it's painful to be without them.
Absolutely. Rosemary, thank you. And that's kind of where I started the conversation today, that my friend Michelle and I both realized that if you have great love, one of you is going to experience the great grief of losing that person. And it's a beautiful reminder to remember the joy of having that gift of that great love. Susan, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. In the past, I have facilitated grief group, and I just noticed a couple of common threads that happen. And I appreciate that you are talking about this, because this just isn't spoken about enough for people to feel comfortable in their grief. One of the things was that they needed permission to grieve almost, even though, you know, in front of people, letting it all hang out, as you say, you know, and not hiding their grief. A lot of people would say, I just feel like I have to contain it till I get home. And, you know, the reassurance of the group was, you know, what I used to say is, you know, grief can hit you standing in the grocery line. You may be fine. And it was like you were saying, your mind can all of a sudden make you feel sad. The other was, I should be over this by now. I should be getting better. I should be doing better. And my comment to that was always, from my research and what I did to prepare for group, was that it's over when it's over. You know, you never lose the love for that person or the feeling of that loss, but you become better in different ways, and it only takes as long as it takes. You know, that your proof of love isn't proven by your length of grief. So those that were doing really well and the other ones were feeling bad in the group, that they weren't moving along as fast, that was my explanation, was, you know, everybody is unique, and therefore our grief experience is unique. Mm-hmm. And because of that, it takes as long as it does. And some people could have loved more than you did, but just because they got through it faster or got through the stages. And that's the other thing. It's okay to be angry. And those stages, all those stages of grief can happen over and over again in any kind of order. And I think that for me was really big, because in my life I've had many times where I've experienced grief and lost loved ones, lost a child. And people would want you to be over that part of it, you know, and now move on to the next. And what I learned from my own experiences and from studying was that it can go on for as long as it goes on, and it can go in different stages. You can go through the stages back and forth and upside down and in between over and over again before you're at a place where you feel like you're not all consumed.
Absolutely. And I think that's what we talked about. Thank you, Susan, for calling in, is that we're not expecting that you get over this person and move on, that you find a new way of experiencing their presence in your life, or a new way of experiencing your feelings and love. And Chris had talked about that also, that we as a culture expect people to get over things very quickly, because I think we're uncomfortable when someone else is grieving and we're not quite sure how to move forward. Or help them, or to hold that space. So I think one of the biggest takeaways is that we have to individually find comfort with loss. We have to feel comfort. We have to find some peace with the inevitability of death. And when all of us can find some peace with the inevitability of death, then when we are there supporting others, we're not filled with discomfort, but we're filled with empathy and space for them. And Lisa, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I've had about 12, 13, but the last one wasn't close to me. It was a friend's mother. But 12 people that are relatively close to me passed away in the past 2 years. And I'm still processing my dog that died 7 years ago. I feel like saying, wait a minute, you know, get in line. You guys, nobody dies until I get through this grieving. But it's like overwhelming. You're not even having a chance to grieve for somebody, and then somebody else close to you passes away.
Yeah, I can relate to that for right now, because my friend's celebration of life is next month, and I'm actually going to be out of town, and not to sound hurtful, but I'm actually relieved. I couldn't imagine myself being able to go there. And, you know, as we said, we're helpers and we're carers for others as therapists. And I feel, you know, I'm having to balance that internal feeling of feeling quote-unquote bad that I can't be there for my friends, but I'm not I'm not there yet.
But I think we lost Lisa. I'm sorry, Lisa, but I did want to empathize with you because I think that is an experience that a lot of us have, that death doesn't give us space. That, you know, quite often we experience multiple losses and deaths in a row and can be bombarded, and that the grieving overwhelms us. And I think for me, if there's a message or a takeaway from the show today, it's to normalize grief as much a part of our day-to-day living as joy and happiness. That if we are people who are feeling anything in the world, we are going to be feeling sadness and grief and loss, and to accept it as a healthy human emotion, and to feel the feelings and to trust that grief will move through us, just like happiness moves through us, just like anger moves through us. Grief is another emotion that we ride these waves in our psyche experiences, and we ebb and flow.
And to share it, because what you just said, we share joy, right?
Yes.
All the time. It's, oh, look at this great thing, and look at this. So I guess we're getting training in how to share in loss too.
Absolutely. And I love that you said that, because I didn't put the two together. That yes,
I just got it when you said that. I was like,
Then that's the takeaway, that we have to open the doors and allow grief to be a part of the daily expression.
And may I share one other thing that really is helping? Is it sounds so basic to say, but it's not changeable. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like I have to keep. It's not changeable. This happened.
Yes.
Ed passed away. And this is the training for life, for everything. It's completely changed me. Mm-hmm. It's like the simplest explanation is getting behind that person that is, I mean, I'm not driving anywhere fast these days. Believe me, I could care less about getting anywhere fast. But there's somebody in front of you and they're not driving the way you want them to drive. It's not changeable in that moment. So all that energy of getting anxious or irritated on any subject, right? I'm in the grocery store the other day. There's like six lines. There's 20 people in each line. It's not changeable. So you know, the death experience shocks you into that reality, mm-hmm. but it's so helpful, really.
Well, and it is to be able to accept death, to accept that it's unchangeable, and then to accept that we will never get over it and go back to who we used to be. That part of the process of grieving is that we are transitioning to a new self and a new awareness. And Constance, thank you for coming in today. This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. You can reach me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, on our website, and also through Facebook. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. As always, I appreciate you listening and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
A man who can't walk on.